Please stand for opening prayers. Anyone that would like to volunteer to do the opening prayer this morning? Sheriff, would you like to volunteer to do the opening prayer? I know you would.
I want to praise you, Heavenly Father. We're thankful for another blessed day. We ask that you be with the court as they take care of the business of the county, the same as the city, and we pray that you be. We ask that you be with those who are sick, also around men and women that are in the military who serve for us in the state. Watch over them. We got a little burn in the home today. We ask that you give us some mercy on all these things we ask in Jesus. Amen.
Amen. If you'll join with the pledges to our United States and Texas flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to the in Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible.
Let the record reflect that all members of court are present today. Commissioners, we need a motion to approve our Commissioners' Court agenda.
Move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Proclamations and resolutions. Emergency Medical Services Week. Mr. Fawn, good morning.
Good morning, Judge Doyle. Commissioners?
Morning.
My name is Ken Fawn. I'm in the Montgomery County Hospital District, EMS Chairman. And I'd like you to designate the week of May 15th to the 21st as Emergency Medical Services Week. Whereas Montgomery County Hospital District provides emergency medical services to the citizens of Montgomery County, and whereas access to quality emergency care dramatically improves the survival and recovery rate of those who experience sudden illness or injury, and whereas the members of the emergency medical service teams, whether career or volunteer, engage in thousands of hours of specialized training and continuing education to enhance their life-saving skills. And whereas the Montgomery County Commissioners Court hereby supports and recognizes the Montgomery County Hospital District's emergency service personnel as an integral part to the citizens of Montgomery County. Now it therefore be resolved that the Commissioners Court of Montgomery County do hereby proclaim the week of May 15th to 21st, 2016 as Emergency Services Medical Week.
Move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Fawn, thank you very much.
Again. Thanks, Ken.
Judge, we need to back up on the agenda and remove that item we talked about. Is that right?
No, I'll get that in just a second.
Get that right, okay.
Yeah. Commissioners, if it's all right with each of you, I'd like to move item 17A on page 9. We have some members of our Mental Health Court Services Board here and recognize them so they can be on about their business. Gloria, if you want to do that, that'd be great. Thank you.
Good morning, Judge, Commissioners. We'd like to ask you to consider and approve the new members of the Mental Health Court Services Advisory Board. And some of them are here this morning, and I'd like to introduce them. The first one will be Judge Wayne Mack. He's not here. Unfortunately, he had court this morning. And I think most everyone here knows him. He's been with the county for about 26 years. He's been in law enforcement for about 15 years. He's served on 12 nonprofit boards in Montgomery County, and now we've asked him to serve on this one. And he's currently serving as the Justice of the Peace for the Justice Court Number 1 in Montgomery County. Next, we have Lieutenant Dan Lafferty. He has been serving in law enforcement since 1991. He has earned many certifications and awards since entering the law enforcement profession. He has been with the Precinct 1 Constable's Office for the last 14 years, and 10 of those years with the Mental Health Unit. He is currently serving as a Senior Lieutenant for Constable Precinct 1 Office in Montgomery County. We have Dr. Ron Massey. He has served in the U.S. Army as a captain and a psychologist. He has supervised several programs while working for the Gulf Coast Regional MHMR in Galveston. He has been in private practice for many years in Montgomery County. He has and is currently providing a wide range of psychological services to the county departments. And he also serves as an adjunct faculty at Sam Houston State University, supervising the practicum students. We have Janet Casper. Janet holds a licensed Bachelor of Social Work from the University of Houston downtown. She has worked as a conservatorship worker for Child Protective Services. She has also worked as the Social Service Manager for the Salvation Army of Montgomery County. She is currently the Program Director for the Youth Outreach Alliance, which is a new collaborative program of Montgomery County Youth Services, Angel Reach, and CASA of Montgomery County. And they assist the youth and young adults who are homeless or at risk of becoming homeless. And she is also the Vice President on the Board of Directors of the Montgomery County Homeless Coalition. We have Evan Robertson. Most of you know him. He holds a Master's of Public Administration from Sam Houston State University. He has a 23-year career working in community centers with the Central Texas MHMR and Harris County MHMRA. He's held a variety of positions for Tri-County, including roles in the Mental Health Crisis Services, the Psychiatric Research Studies, Information Technology, Housing for Persons with Mental Illness, and Quality Management. And he is currently the Executive Director of Tri-County Behavioral Health Care. And then we have Reverend David Lindwall, who is not here, unfortunately. He had a death in the family. He is a graduate of the University of Georgia and the Asbury Theological Seminary. He's worked in the petrochemical industry for 15 years prior to becoming a pastor. He had served in churches in East Texas before moving to Montgomery County. He's an ordained elder in the United Methodist Church and is currently serving as a senior pastor of Montgomery United Methodist Church and has been there since 2010. And that would be the Mental Health Court Services Advisory Board.
And what does that advisory board do? What?
They're going to be overseeing the policies and procedures, making sure that, you know, we follow them in accordance to what we've created and that they're assisting the mentally ill population.
And I'll just remind you, Judge and Commissioners, we've always had an advisory board since we began this program years ago, comprised of members of the community. Wayne has been on it since its inception. We've always had a representative from Tri-County. Evan is now the new Cindy Seal on the board. And Dan Lafferty's always been a member of the board as well. So we think it's very important that we have community input as we try to deal with some of the issues that are presented to the program. So,
okay. Great.
Thank you for serving.
All right. Thank you very much.
Can I approve the board? Thank you.
Commissioners, we have a motion.
Move.
Move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
Thank you
each and every one
Thank
for your
God.
Service.
Yeah.
Appreciate you. Thank you. Okay. Commissioners, we need a motion to approve our Commissioners' Court's minute from our session dated April 25th.
Second.
And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And from our session dated April 26th.
Move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Commissioners, under consent, I have one item, item F1B on page 5 that needs to be removed from the agenda. It's the only change that I have on consent unless there are others.
Judge, I'd like to move 9A3 to the open, please.
3 to open, okay. Any other changes, Commissioners?
Move with those changes.
Second.
Aye. Motion carries. All right, let's take item 9A3 now, Commissioner.
Okay. Consider and accept TCDRS plan assessment for year 2017. I would like for us to consider, and I think there's no changes here that we have right now, but last budget, I made a motion to try to affect that COLA for the retirees. It didn't go very far, but I'd like for us to look at that this year, maybe do a little preliminary work right now, find out what it would cost us if we do a percentage. I would make that motion that we defer this until some further information about the retirees' COLAs.
And certainly we can gather that information. In recent years, the retirement system has developed some tools to be able to help us anticipate what that cost would be as we move forward, so we could prepay that rather than having it be an impact on future years' budgets. We could take care of that in a current year budget. if that's something that y'all choose to do.
So do we need an approval for the plan assessment today and then consider that at budget time, or do we need, can we defer this till we get the information that you need?
We could still defer this. Traditionally, you do approve it before the budget. That way we can use it to help build your budget as a recommended budget.
Well, let's defer
We do have time to still bring it back to you. I could certainly work with them.
Is that what you want to do, defer it and have her put together some information?
A second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. All right. Just to item 10, citizens' comments. For those that have that want to make comments on items that are on today's agenda, read a brief statement here. We will now invite the public for comment on items on today's agenda. Please state your name and topic of your comments before beginning your remarks, and public comment may not exceed 3 minutes. Questions or concerns about the operations of Montgomery County programs may be referred to the department heads or elected officials, and the Texas Open Meetings Law prevents the court from deliberating or taking actions on matters raised in public comments. So if there's anyone that would like to address the court on an item that's on today's agenda, now we'll have another public comment segment at the end for items that you'd like to discuss that are not on today's agenda. But if they're on today's agenda, anyone that would like to make comment can do so now. I have three that are signed up. The first one is Shirley Cusack.
Good morning. My name is Shirley Cusack, and I live in Precinct 3. Today, I'd like to speak in favor of the proposed ordinance change regarding community cats and the animal shelter. Community cats is a term that's basically used to refer to unowned cats. According to the Humane Society of the United States, there are 86 million cats that actually live in households, but they estimate that there's tens of millions of cats that are unowned, that are living in the U.S. So this concept of a community cat program is not a new idea. In 2009, I attended a presentation by the leaders of Jacksonville's Animal Control and a nonprofit called No More Homeless Pets. The purpose of their presentation was about the partnership that they had formed to prevent the unnecessary killing of healthy cats due to lack of space at their shelter. They did this by sterilizing, vaccinating, and then returning them to their outside home. The benefits of the program: cats were no longer being euthanized for space. Sterilizing meant that the mating behaviors that were offensive to some people and unnecessary litters of kittens were eliminated. And within about 2 years of their program, they already started seeing significant declines in the intakes of cats at the shelter. Shelters without a community cat program frequently euthanize 60 to 80% of the cats coming into the shelter due to lack of space. MCAS has an unacceptable EU rate for cats, especially during the summer months when the fosters and the rescue groups are at capacity. The program that Jacksonville started has been successful not only in Jacksonville, but has spread throughout the country. Austin, San Antonio, and Waco are just examples here in Texas that have implemented programs based on this strategy. The proposed ordinance change is based on the recommendation by Alley Cat Allies, and Alley Cat Allies is the only national advocacy organization dedicated to the protection and humane treatment of cats. The program is specifically for healthy, unowned adult cats that are already living outdoors. It excludes kittens, unhealthy cats, and owner-surrendered cats. These would go through the normal process of adoption and rescue groups at the shelter. If we have the opportunity to implement a plan that has proven to be successful throughout this country.
It's Cusack, your 3 minutes has expired.
Why wouldn't we try to save these cats? Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next is Joe Michaels. Good morning.
Judge, commissioners.
How are you?
Good morning, Judge. I've spoken to this group several times, and it's always been thanking and praising you for the work you do. And this is the first time I've ever come with a note of criticism. My concern is with the animal shelter program and its current leadership. When the county ran the animal shelter, we had great relationships with foster groups and with rescue groups. And the reality is it takes a village, if you will, to run a shelter because you have to have a lot of volunteers. I'm married to one of the two old women who volunteer at the shelter. When Constable Hollifield took over, he did a great job, kept it running, maintained those relationships. Then we had two other doctors come in and take over, and things went in a handbasket pretty quickly. We lost relationships with our rescue groups because our animals were sick, our animals were not being taken care of, there was an extraordinary rise in distemper and parvo. Parents were getting kids from our shelter, taking them home to their kids, and bringing them back dead because they were unhealthy when they were released. Our rescue groups were refusing to take them. When you lose that village effort, you can't get rid of all the animals, and you begin to have an overcrowding program. You have sickness. Those two doctors left. Our core volunteer team came back in, got the place up and running again, reduced parvo, reduced distemper, and got the program back to where we were now again effectively taking care of things. The latest change has been for the new management to come in and do precisely what you would do if you were brought in to run a new company, and that is fire most of the people who have been your key employees with no plan for how to replace them. And as a result, we've again lost the support of our rescue groups. Our volunteers are discouraged. There's no communication from the leadership. We need to have a more cohesive program at the animal shelter. It takes a village, it takes the leadership, it takes the employees, it takes the rescue groups, and it takes the volunteers. And that can't happen when so many of those groups fear there's a village idiot running the program. Thank you.
Mr. Michaels, thank you for your comments. Next, we have Sheila Cox.
Good morning again.
Good morning.
Good morning.
For 5 months prior to Dr. Hayden being given the directorship, you called in a group of experienced people to dig in and clean up the mess, the sickness, and the broken relationships from Drs. Ross and Blue. These folks, as well as many volunteers, worked tirelessly and without any support from this office and had MCAS healthy and up to about an 85% live release rate. And they also had a very effective barn cat and feral cat program, even without the community cat program. And we never did see the numbers of EUs that are in other parts of the country, and we never did EU cats for space. So that has never been an issue here at Montgomery County. Over the past 2 weeks, I've seen Mr. Clark at MCAS and had him speak to me more often than in the past 2 years. I want to ask him, where were you in the past 5 months when they needed things and now suddenly they appear with Dr. Hayden? Where were you when the staff asked repeatedly to have their emails changed? Where were you when you were supposed to install the ventilation system that was promised over the winter? Where were you when they didn't have enough desks and computers for staff? Where were you when Dr. White wanted to hire a very capable vet and he was denied? Where were you when they wanted to fire a particular staff member for poor performance, yet they had to document and document and document? Yet these same people were fired in an instant, even though their work, without your support, was garnering tremendous results. Where were you when they needed the credit card machine, and now it's appeared? Where were you when staff members were doing jobs way above their pay grade and not getting compensated? And now, new, unqualified staff have come in at higher wages than the previous experienced staff. Where were you when it was discovered that Drs. Ross and Blue left behind broken refrigerators and left and took supplies and equipment with them? Volunteers chipped in with their own money to help stock the clinic again. Where were you when my friend and I asked you repeatedly to come spend some time with us at MCAS so you could see for yourself how good things were going? I've spoken with these folks, and they cannot remember a time when you just showed up to talk with them and ask them how things were going and what could you do to make things better for them. You never came to ask them how you could help. Yet 2 weeks ago, when you caught me up at MCAS, you were asking me, a volunteer, for ideas to make things better and asking my advice. This is so backwards. It seems to me that you never intended for that group to succeed or to stay at MCAS. It appears to me that you were just using them as a stopgap and to glean from their expertise and protocols. It seems to me that our tax dollars would have been better spent building up and supporting the proven track record of the experienced staff that cleaned up your mess from Drs. Ross and Blue. Instead, we're right back at square one. Mr. Clark, I want this fixed.
Ms. Cox, thank you. Now, that's the only, those are the only individuals that I had signed up to speak. Is there anyone else that would like to address the court today? Concern, this is an item that's on today's agenda.
Good morning. My name is Deidre Robbins. I am a cat foster for the shelter for about 4 years. I'm here to talk about the community cat program. And I'm going to give you the numbers so you understand how it's going to affect you and your precincts. Under the plan, they're wanting to take 300 cats a month out of the shelter and place them in your neighborhoods. Out of those 300 cats, 100 could probably put in a feral colony by themselves. Don't bother anybody. Okay? 50 of those cats could be returned with the people that brought them in. They have a caregiver. They're safe. They'll stay out of your hair. 150 of them got to go somewhere. Where are they going to go? They're going to go in your neighborhoods. They're going to go in the parking lots. The community program that is before you gives them the ability to do that. She's going to tell you that's not going to happen. That's not the way that's going to work. She has no stop signs. Nothing's going to stop her. They will be everywhere. I want you to think about that before this goes forward. It needs to be tabled. More information needs to be given.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, I'm cut off. Somebody else was supposed to speak about the numbers. The kittens that Shirley's talked about, that's not true. Kittens 8 weeks older, 2 pounds, can be released. Why would you do that? Why would you release 8-week-old kittens? That makes no sense at all. So you need to not do this. You need to talk to people that know I've done this for 4 years. I'll be retired. The cats that they're releasing are the ones that I take. They're adoptable. They can't survive outside. This is absurd. The last thing is, Mr. Clark, your lack of communication and dishonesty have created so many problems for myself and so many others, including your fellow commissioners and the judge. I honestly do not understand how you have been allowed to stay in control of the shelter's future. I am sorry, Mr. Clark, that you lack the moral compass needed to rebuild the shelter so that it benefits the homeless pets in Montgomery County.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to make comment before we move forward?
Judge, would you like me to comment on some of that or wait for the rest?
Sure, go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm Dr. Hayden, I'm the animal cruelty director.
Well, is this a public comment or about the items
just about
here?
About that comment in particular, if you'd like me to respond.
That's fine. We'll take the item up later. If it's about the CAT program?
It is.
Well, if it's specifically about the CAT program, we'll take it up later. But
yes,
if you had other comments.
No, sir. Thank you. That'll work.
All right. Anyone else? Okay. Item 11A. Consider and approve filing for unclaimed capital credits with the Texas Comptroller of Public Accounts for the year 2015 and authorize myself to sign. Jim, you want to talk just a little bit about, where is Jim here? Just a little bit about what that is.
Yeah, it's basically there's uncollected funds from electric cooperatives, and you all have the ability to apply to use those funds to the Texas Comptroller's office and determine how you want to direct that usage and some of the suggested usages that they provided it should be in the backup are for economic development, for example, things of that nature.
Do we have any idea what the dollar amount is?
We don't.
Okay.
You know, it could be minimal. We have no idea. We'd need more information to find out exactly what we're talking about.
I move.
Question or comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Item B, consider, discuss, and take appropriate action on appointment of the Citizens Committee to review elected official salaries. And we talked about that in the past, Commissioners, about having a Citizens Committee. I propose that we'd have a committee with each member of the court appointing a citizen to that committee.
Okay.
And then let them review salaries for all elected officials and they would be recommendations only.
I thought we had a board for that, a grievance
board. That's a grievance board. This is just a salary recommendation board. If an elected official files a grievance, there's a process where we draw names from the grand jury. This would be a committee that would review all elected official salaries and make recommendations.
This would be four raises above any COLA?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think that's a good idea, and next court we can bring the names back.
Is that a motion?
I move, yes.
Other questions or comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Item C. This is just an informational item, Commissioners. I asked Jenny to come today. We talked a little bit about, you know, we've got that second round of projects from pass-through funding. I think it's time we start considering some of those projects. And Jenny, did you want to make any comments on where that funding may be?
Good morning, Judge, Commissioners.
Morning.
As you know, when Montgomery County entered into the pass-through agreement in 2005, it was granted $186 million in reimbursements in addition to some Houston district funding to bring it to 212 to finance the $220 million first round of pass-through. At that time, as the needs assessment of the county was detailed, much like what's been happening over the last couple of years with the various mobility program plans, there were so many projects on the list, there was no way that first round of money would ever cover all the needs in the county. So the county commissioners at that time made the decision to only take a portion of the reimbursement laid out in the pass-through agreement against the first round of projects and to leave the remaining amount, which at this point totals about $56 million, in to cover future projects. At that time, the governor and the then chairman of the Transportation Commission had hoped that the pass-through program would be a sustainable program over time. It was sort of, its demise was because of its popularity. They ended up doing about $3 billion worth of projects throughout the state on pass-through, none of them quite as favorable as what Montgomery County received, as Montgomery County was the first one to execute an agreement with the state. So I've had some conversations with various members of the court and had some conversations with the leadership at TxDOT, particularly the executive director, James Bass. James, at the time that the pass-through agreement was structured, was then the chief financial officer of TxDOT. He's now become the executive director and is always extremely, you know, complimentary of how the first phase program went here in Montgomery County and how well it worked and the cars that we're seeing on the improved roadways are growing every year as laid out in the fact that our reimbursement has grown every year and you're just about or you should be at the maximum reimbursement this year since all projects are open. So, you know, there has been some discussion or some concern that the state would, if that money sits too long, would do what it's always allowed to do, which is sweep accounts and move it to other necessary projects. TxDOT, as a policy, has adopted a highly congested program, and its goal is to take care of the most congested projects in the state of Texas, and it maintains 100 most congested list all the time. They are working away at that at this time, and they have said, I think it's important that Montgomery County decide what they want to do with the rest of their money so that there's an intent of what the county intends to do and projects that can be worked forward. And when you go back and look at the agreement, there's some specifics about, you know, how that money is being held in, will be held in escrow, how it will be laid out. It is not intended necessarily that money would be dispersed in the same fashion that the pass-through was. There would have to be a new agreement negotiated with the state of Texas, and Director Bass said that he has a team in place that could sit down with the county and negotiate an agreement at the time that was appropriate. And one of the things that's going to have to happen is the county's going to have to put forward a list of projects because there's sort of an insinuated requirement that the department would concur on the projects. And
I thought that was a specific requirement.
There is a specific for the excess revenue off the 242 DC. They specifically have to concur on those, any projects that are developed with the excess revenue on that, from that gathered from toll revenues. But it's an insinuation because it has, these projects have to be included in the state highway fund program. They have to go in the unified plan. They have to be included in the HGAC plan. All of those steps require TxDOT concurrence. So that's why I'm saying it's an implied requirement, not a specific requirement. And so, you know, it's a, I know the county has a lot of needs. Case in point, the last bond issue, you know, everyone had more projects than the bond issue could cover in this phase. And so, you know, it's, I think that you would have a receptive audience in Austin, and here at the Houston District as well. The Houston District has said, well, they're ready to start the next round of projects, and so I think it's probably time to start having those conversations so that your money is retained for what it was intended to build projects here in Montgomery County.
I think it's a great idea.
Initially we had, was it $78 million? To start with?
It was $76 million to start with,
million.
And then we moved some money for the 242 program to see where that came in as that project.
Some of that's still available, right?
And some of that's still available, yes, sir. I think when talking with the auditor's office, there's probably $10 million, give or take, and Phyllis
it's
would have
about
to be
10.6.
Yeah, I'd have to confirm that. You know, so in addition to the 56 that is specified by the second amendment to the pass-through agreement, you would have that other amount available to do projects.
So about $66.6 million, give or take.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Good. Well, Commissioners, I would suggest that we start putting together a list. Maybe each of you be thinking about what projects in your individual precincts that would qualify, state projects that would make good projects to partner with TxDOT on.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
It has to be state highways.
It has to be projects that would be eligible for highway reimbursement. And, you know, that's not always an FM or a state highway. It can be a connected road between two major facilities. That's why it's important to lay it out and sit down and have those conversations. I mean, obviously, they're going to want to, the department would want to see the money utilized where it gets the most bang for the buck.
That the state will make that determination.
Well, I think that's part of the negotiation. You know, I think that, you know, much like if you remember, Commissioner, when we took the first round of projects through, we had to write a justification for each project that was taken forward. And, you know, traffic we saw today, traffic projected in 5, 10, 15 years, you know, how the improvements would accommodate, improve congestion, improve mobility, and plan for the future. So I think that there is some latitude to justify over, say, you know, whatever we believe the busiest project today would be. Today, driving 1488, I would say I think 1488 is the busiest project today, but that's because it's just the traffic has grown tremendously out there. But even though it was improved less than 10 years ago.
And
but
you could walk us through this process of evaluating the projects and work with TxDOT to determine the feasibility or viability of each project and then kind of take us through that entire process. Okay.
Like I said, I mean, it's $66 million is not near enough money to take care of everything that this county needs, obviously, but you know, it does bring some more projects to the table, adding on to what the county is currently doing with bond funds. And it just, you know, one more piece of the puzzle to relieve congestion and improve mobility.
Any potential of leveraging that against any other dollars, any way to?
Oh, I think so. There's specifically some language in Section 11 of the pass-through agreement that talks about, if there's contributions by the department. So there's sort of an insinuation that you would leverage the money. There's also reference to the fact that even though that the escrow account does not specifically collect interest at the time that the county puts the projects forward, that the department would make some decision about what interest that money should have earned and would contribute that to the projects as well.
Yeah.
You said something about
tying connector roads together or tying, what did you say a while ago?
Well, there's a lot of roads that are eligible for state funding that are not necessarily specifically on the state highway system, you know, that have a state designation like a FM or a state highway. And typically those are roads that are connecting, you know, two major facilities, two state highway or two federal projects to improve connectivity.
If we were to try to connect 2978 to 249, that might be a good project.
Because that's connecting too, yes, sir. That would be one to take forward. Now, in the list of whether the district thought that was the most important project, you know, that's part of the justification. But I certainly think that there are projects here in Montgomery County that fall in that category. And in the past, there are ones that TxDOT has considered. And since this money is already truly Montgomery County money, it's considered local funding, I think there's probably a little more, you know, latitude to use it on connectivity projects in addition to expansion of added capacity on the state highway system.
Would there be any, would the state have any precedence over congested existing roadways, expanding those before building new roadways? Is there any preference, do you know?
Well, I mean, they have their own unified transportation plan, and it, in, you know, in this district, in the Houston district, it has gone through and looked at, in conjunction with the groups at HGAC, planned what needs to happen to address mobility today and mobility in the future. And so, you know, along those lines, I mean, you see a lot of projects that are clearly moving forward that are adding capacity to an existing facility. But in some cases, it makes sense to add, you know, where you have high growth areas like you're seeing in Montgomery County, to add in some new roads. I think the important thing to remember is you only have $66 million.
Yeah.
So what can you do with your $66 million that makes the most sense and gets the, you know, the biggest, like I said, bang for the buck?
Thank you.
Certainly.
Good. So, Commissioners, if y'all will be thinking about those projects over the next couple of weeks, we might want to get pretty serious about putting those together pretty soon.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Jeannie, thank you. All right. Justice of the Peace, Precinct 5.
Three. Consider and approve a request for $300 from the Juvenile Case Manager Fund for seminar expenses. Is that an appropriate use of Juvenile Case Manager Fund?
Yes, this fund traditionally pays the salary and office supplies as well as training costs of juvenile case managers.
I move.
Questions or comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Emergency management. Mr. Hess.
Good morning, Judge, Commissioners.
Good morning.
Please, as the court, I want to take my items out of order, if that's all right. We'll start with item C. I figure good news is probably best heard first.
All right.
Just to give you an update on where we're at, currently we've had over 600 homes self-report to our office through the internet or phone calls as far as homes that have received damage. We have teams out, trucks still out rolling every day. They're rolling 6 days a week, and so far they've collected close to 7,000 cubic yards of debris.
Darren, hold on a second. Judge, we're some people in the audience are saying they can't hear anything that we're saying. Is there anything you can do to adjust the volume? Or
I can try and...
a phone.
Yeah.
Yeah, we may need to get replacement system.
This is a feedback mode, so...
All right, I'll try and speak up a little bit as well.
Hey, thanks.
So the trucks are out in the neighborhoods picking up debris. We've close to 7,000 cubic yards.
Are already out?
They are out. Okay. That's correct. They should be finishing up TLTR today. They'll move east and north again. They'll get back up north and start working on that debris up north as well, simultaneously east and north after today. Last week we spent 2 days.
Hey, Darren, what are they going to do with that debris?
They're taking it to the landfill.
Okay.
Yes, sir. They're also taking care of our white goods and our hazardous and hazardous materials that are picked up as well. So they've assumed all that responsibility. Last week we spent 2 days driving roads and looking at damage with FEMA. On Wednesday we did home tours looking for IA damage. During that day we were out all day. FEMA looked at 220 homes that had major damage, 40 plus that were completely destroyed. Friday we went out again with FEMA for the PA assistance. Again we were out all day. We went to about three different areas of the county where they looked at damage. We had estimated a little over around $2 million. They came back and said we had 3.8. So that, and that's just a couple portions of the county. That's not even countywide. As a result of those tours, late yesterday afternoon, Montgomery County was added to the presidential declaration for individual assistance. So that assistance shall be forthcoming. We were currently working with the state to set up two disaster recovery centers. The hotline is also available for the citizens, as well as we're going to try and do some assessment teams.
Darren, will that come in the form of loans or grants?
Both.
Both?
Both. Okay. SBA is open form, as well as grants from from FEMA. We're still waiting on the PA. A lot of that is just the state moving through their processes. They still have to meet their threshold. We anticipate them meeting that threshold, but we haven't received that word yet. So we're still on a waiting pattern for the PA.
Darren, again, you and your staff, y'all did a fantastic job
walking us through
this process and making certain that we were addressing the needs and concerns as we needed to. We wouldn't have been able to do it without you.
The whole process is changing. It changes probably faster than the Texas weather does. I have a couple staff members at a training class this morning, as well as one in Walker County sitting through their kickoff meeting, so we can try and stay abreast and ahead of the game so we know what to tell our citizens. That concludes item C. I'll move up to...
Darren, real quick, on the public assistance side, as far as getting reimbursement for the county, is there anything in particular we need to be doing?
I think we're there. Again, keep those records intact and keep them coming forward to both our office and to the auditor's office as far as your timesheets and your worksheet reports. Because once we are declared and we start that kickoff meeting, we have a relatively short window in which we have to have all of that data collected, all of our estimates firmly in place and quotes in place. So
Okay. It'll
be a fast-moving process once it finally goes.
Okay.
Good.
Any other questions on C?
Sir?
I'll move to B. This item on the agenda, consider, discuss, and take appropriate action on grant application for FY16 pre-disaster mitigation planning grant. Authorize the Office of Emergency Management to work with HGAC to facilitate the application on behalf of Montgomery County, and further authorize Judge Doyle to sign and approve. In this grant, Montgomery County is not the recipient. This is HGAC is the recipient. They're just saying we'd like to help you guys with your mitigation plan, which will expire first quarter of 17. It's a heavy lift for us, so any assistance they can provide would be great. So they would be the complete recipients of that. We're just a beneficiary. They're doing it on behalf of Montgomery County. So I ask the court's approval on that.
Okay. We have a motion.
Move.
Second.
Questions or comments, Commissioners? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you, Court. Item A, I have some handouts for you. Item A, as it reads, discuss, consider, and take appropriate action on Montgomery County's participation in the FY16 Flood Mitigation Assistance Program. If approved, allow Emergency Management to work with contractors to facilitate applying for the grant and authorize Judge Doyle to sign. This, in a nutshell, this grant application is for flood buyouts of severe repetitive loss and repeat repetitive loss homes in Montgomery County. We've begun collecting some data. As you remember, during special session, we approved a contract to start working with Tetra Tech as our contractor. They've collected quite a bit of data. Overall, we have about just under 1,000 homes in Montgomery County that could apply for a grant. There's three different grants. To address all of those in this short time frame, we just felt like was undoable, unachievable, so we narrowed the parameters down to the 100% buyout, and we asked them to find out from the community if they're receiving any community interest, because what happens is they apply on behalf of the citizens and the county, and then they work to get that grant, and then if the grant's awarded, they work through that process. To date, we have just under 50 citizens who are interested, and so those numbers that I gave you on that first page reflect what that grant would total if the court decides to move forward with it. Make no doubt, it is a burden on the county. There is some background work that the county is responsible for doing, some record keeping, some grant management, auditing paperwork. So there is some commitment on the county's behalf. We can contract a large portion of that back to a contractor to handle and mitigate for us.
With that $645,000 administrative fee?
Darren, this is about buying houses?
That's correct, yes, sir.
What this is?
Repetitive flood homes, yes, sir.
Huh?
Repetitive flood homes, homes that are constantly flooded, or they have four or more claims that equal the value of the home, or they have...
We've tried this before.
We did. I think 94 was the last time.
And it didn't work.
It was a headache, yes, sir.
Some
of the program has changed.
I don't think we should get off in it, but...
Right. And that's why I wanted to bring it to the court. I want a yay. I'd like to have a yes or a no.
It's a mistake.
But we've identified, like I said, we've only identified about 50 of the citizens who are actually even interested in it. We sent out just over 100, well, around 150 mailers to try and to gauge that interest, and so we have 50 back.
This would be us buying these houses out or FEMA buying these houses out?
But it's FEMA buying them out, but we take ownership of the property once it's back to green space, and then it's up to the county to maintain.
Yeah. I mean, Darren, I certainly think it's something that we should consider looking at. We have homes in Precinct 3 that have repetitively flooded, and the cost to the county in just trying to make sure that we get the people out of the homes, that we remove the debris from the homes, the time and energy that we spend monitoring the floodwaters, the law enforcement needs, emergency services needs exceed that 5% cost. So I certainly would like to see us continue to look at this option.
And this is an annually reoccurring grant application. We have a really short window, so it's kind of a rush this year. We can take a look at it again next year if the court so chooses.
And so the county's portion for roughly 50 homes, $13.5 million.
That's what the grant application would be for. That includes the 5% M&A, which the county would use to manage and administer the grant.
What this is... I can't hear very good.
I'm sorry.
What this is, we'd be applying for a grant to buy these homes out. Is that what
that is? Correct, yes, sir. On behalf of the citizens, that's correct, yes, sir.
100%.
And the 100%. The consideration is whether we're going to apply for the grant. Is that what we're doing?
That's correct, yes, sir.
Okay.
It has to be turned in next week.
Okay.
And it's voluntary.
That is correct. It is the entire process is voluntary. At any point in time, any one of these 50 could back out and say we're not interested in... we would return the funds back to...
What are the likelihood that of the 150 that you sent out, people have been displaced that didn't get that letter, that we may have...
There is that possibility.
A larger number than...
I know we've received at least 10 letters that were undeliverable, so there is that possibility. Yes, sir. That was discussed.
But this...
These are homes that have flooded at least four times. Is that what you said?
That's correct. At least four where the damages claimed exceeded... met or exceeded the value of the property.
And we've done this before. And these people, they didn't want to do it. The ones that we took were a burden on the taxpayer. There's just, I mean, I don't think we need to be in it personally, but that's just me.
The only difference in this one, Commissioner, is it's 100% FEMA, where we had to fund 25% last time. They've given us an administrative fee where we could contract someone to deal with a lot of that.
That's correct. And even in the initial application, we estimate that top figure there is what we would is what it would cost us per home total, and then we're adding another $8,000 to allow for contractor fees, and then probably
the county
another
would
two
not
and
be
a half.
Obligated to do anything,
sir.
The county would not be obligated to do anything?
There would be some manpower requirements, some in-kind.
Yep.
We have records to keep up, and we have oversight of it, and the auditor has a lot of work to do.
We do have 50 people holding their hands up saying they want to do it right now. So I think that may be the difference. And last time we went to them, and
it was 140, about 140 last time.
Yeah.
So we buy these homes out, we tear them down, demolish them, and haul them off.
Take it to ground, yes, sir. And then
slabs and all.
Slabs and all, and then
nobody
the county
can come back in there and do anything.
That's correct. And the county is responsible for maintenance of the lot after that.
We mow the lots.
We just let it go back to the vegetative state, though.
Correct.
Yeah. And the county would likely have to engage in some different purchasing practices. We just learned from FEMA that there's some purchasing practices that Montgomery County undertakes that FEMA just disallows straight off the bat. So we would also, Darren speaks the truth when he says
basically there's no such thing as free money. I mean, there is an administrative cost to all of this.
What other departments in Montgomery County have to get involved in this?
Off the top of my head, it would be purchasing, our office, and the auditor, and then whatever other departments the court chooses. Probably some engineering.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think they were involved last time for sure. At what level?
But we wouldn't do the same permitting process that we did in 94 where they applied for a building permit and it all ran through the engineer.
My understanding, from the best that I can obtain in the short time that I've been trying to get that, is no, we don't have to. It's however the county wants to manage that project.
That was a nightmare.
That's correct.
The only other question I've got is if they're insured, say it's a $200,000 home and they're going to get an $80,000 insurance claim, do we pay the difference and they take their insurance money, or do we just, do you have that answer?
The way that I understand it, and I don't have a contractor here to help support my answer, but if they've received flood insurance money and they have not put that back into the home, then yes, that comes off the purchase price. If they put it back into the home, then it would be the full purchase price.
Okay.
Market value.
And Darren, the 50 homes that are estimated in this number, I mean, it's first come, first serve. If 75 show up, we would reapply next year.
That's
if
correct.
The court
yes,
wanted
sir.
To. So, it, I mean, it's really these 50 people that have okay. said yes. I think it's
And when it comes time for the final offer, that of those 50, 40 of them may say, no, that price isn't good enough to get me,
to move me out. I move on 13A.
Second. Have a motion and a second. Any other questions or comments, commissioners? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. All right. Darren, thank you.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Item 14, Forensic Services. Commissioners, this is consider and discuss and take appropriate action to transfer $101,000 from line item number 7101, which is the salary of the department head, to line item 7441, which is contract services, to cover expenses for contract pathologist pending arrival of our new forensic director. We're just taking Dr. Vesey's salary, moving that over into the contract line so we can pay contract pathologists.
When do you expect the new director to start?
August 1.
And Judge, it looks like, by all accounts, you found a good one.
I think we found a great one. I'm really excited there.
I move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Sheriff.
Morning, Judge, Commissioner.
Morning.
On 15A, ask you to consider and accept the Memorandum of Understanding between the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement HSI Joint Operation Program and the Montgomery County Sheriff's Office. The overtime funding is the second and final allotment for FY16 and is listed below. All benefits will be funded by the Sheriff's 5601 budget. And that's MOCO net $2,750 and the gang unit $2,000.
Move.
Second.
Questions or comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
15B, ask you consider and approve the transfer of excess position funds within seven civilian detention officer positions to a jail maintenance tech 3 position to accommodate an employee transfer from the county airport to the MCSO jail, supporting documents, details, positions providing funding, and the transfer of position funds do not increase the current salary structure.
Move.
Second.
Can you give us some explanation on what exactly this is?
On what it is?
Yeah. And it seems we're taking money from detention officers that not too long ago you came to and asked us to increase the pay for these detention officers, and now you want to take that money and move it and give it to somebody else. So I'm just trying to figure it out.
It's excess money.
Carol. Commissioner, my understanding is that you have detention officers who are paid a minimum salary, and what the Sheriff's Department had was some senior detention officers who were making more, and they're no longer in those positions. They're bringing over a person from a different department, and they want to keep their salary the same. They would still be in the range. It would be a little bit higher than the entry-level detention officer, but it would certainly be lower than the maximum level detention officer.
Is that where we gave those increases for those minimum?
Yes,
level?
And with
did I get that right, Chief?
Like that, it won't affect the budget.
Any other questions?
Yeah.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thanks.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thanks, Sheriff. Office of Court Administration.
Good morning, Judge, Commissioners.
Please pardon my frog voice this morning, battling a little bit of a cough. This morning in 16A, I ask that you consider and approve the transfer of $3,021.74 for annual salary plus benefits from line item 465-7104 overtime to position 465-9-8407-1 OCA manager. This change does not increase the FY16 budget, and I sent a memo regarding this to each of you individually last week.
Move.
Second.
A motion to second. Any questions or comments?
Nate?
Yep.
Do you want to give us just a quick explanation of what this is for?
Sure. We have a position that in our department that provides interpreting at the probable cause in the jail. Probable cause happens 7 days a week. Heretofore, the position was classified as non-exempt, and this was the weekend interpreting was dealt with via overtime. With the change to an exempt position, same person, same job duties, we had to go back and reevaluate the job position, add in those duties which were not heretofore within the position description questionnaire, and that additional the job duties that are now being added
when they
are asking for an increase to reflect those job responsibilities.
When they went from non-exempt to exempt, wasn't there a raise involved with that at
no.
the time? No. Not $5,600?
No. Not that I'm aware of. But I was only of the understanding that she was made exempt within the last 2 months.
So just before that, she received?
Correct. I mean, it was within this fiscal year that her position was actually reviewed and her was reclassified from non-exempt to exempt.
But there was a pretty substantial increase last year. What was that for?
That was coming to you with a request. She had gotten her bachelor's degree, which very much helped her in her position administering my department. And that's why I asked for it in the budget last year.
No, the Fair Labor Standards Act specifically separates exempt and non-exempt employees, and the benefit or a primary advantage of classifying an employee as exempt is that you don't have to track their hours or pay them overtime, no matter how many hours they work.
Right.
Since your request has come through, I've had another elected official and another department head approach me saying if you're successful, that they too are going to ask for people to start exempt employees to receive a stipend or overtime. My suggestion would be that you rework the PDQ and her hours and accommodate this accordingly.
Well, I have updated the PDQ with these job duties included in it.
I just don't think it's an appropriate way to handle it.
Well, if the court wants to set that as the precedent, then that's the court's decision.
Other questions or comments?
Move.
Well, we already have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Opposed.
I'm opposed.
I voted aye. I'm still on the uptake.
Motion carries.
Thank you.
Animal control.
Good morning, Judge, Commissioners. I'm here to ask you to consider and take appropriate action on revisions to Montgomery County Animal Control Ordinance. And I know BD has worked that. I assume you guys have read it. That's the community cat program. I know you've heard today that, you know, we're going to pick up 300 cats and put them back, and they have to go somewhere. It turns out those 300 cats came from somewhere. They're just going back to where they were. They already have homes. Right now we're picking up, animal control's picking up cats. They're 10 or 12 pounds. Somebody's already feeding them. They already have homes. They have owners. Our return to owner rate is less than 0.5%. Nobody's coming looking for their cats. In fiscal year 2014 to 15, we had 51 cats returned to owners. That's not good enough. So right now we're just collecting them, stressing them, and killing them. They have to be rehomed to, so some are rehomed to other people, but not to where they came from. So we'll end up long-term saving money, reducing the number of feral cats, and doing a better job, because what we're doing now isn't working.
We have a motion, Commissioner.
Move.
Second.
Questions or comments? Now, what are we paying now as we, if we pick up a cat, or a cat's brought into the clinic, to the shelter, what is the cost to us to...
Correct. Yes, sir. So it's been estimated $70+ with employees, time, supplies, euthanasia solution. And that's, I think, basically for a week. But some of these cats are staying for much, much longer than that. So if we can save that and then apply that to better service the number of dogs that we have coming through and help service that, we'll be in better shape.
And so, what would be the cost with this
program? Right now, we're talking $40. So there's going to be a contract written, you know, that will make sense, and you guys will approve the contract.
But being euthanized, those cats will be put back out.
Yeah, so we'll save money and save lives.
But one of the concerns I've heard is if you take a cat back where someone's called to have the cat picked up, what becomes the issue there if they call again?
Well, they're calling for, because the cat's doing something they don't like, whether it's yowling in the middle of the night, urinating on things, mating behavior. So once you take away the sex hormones, the behaviors go away. So the thing is, somebody's already feeding that cat, you know, so... We need to educate our community of what's going on and then change our ordinance so we're not picking up ear-tipped cats.
Dr. Hayden, most of the feedback I received, both written and over the phone, has been negative. They have not been in favor of this community cat program, neither how it's written nor the concept of picking up. If you go through the trouble of calling to have a cat removed, you don't want to see it back in your yard. You just don't. It doesn't matter if it's making noise or spraying or not. And I'm concerned for the well-being of this cat once it gets dropped back in. The first time they're going to make a phone call, the second time, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't think we have enough information right now, and I have no support for the program.
Commissioner, so that concern of what's going to happen to this cat later has been, you know, presented throughout the country. And it turns out, people aren't poisoning and shooting. They're not coming back dead. They're just living their lives without the interference of people.
Plus, they're not populating.
Right. They're not repopulating. So right now, we're taking cats.
You're talking taking a lot of cats out of circulation because of the spay neuter program, and that makes sense.
Correct. So if we steal a cat from that community, the food's still there. Another cat's going to drop six kittens. It's just going to happen.
There's no reason why you can't spay neuter them when you take them in. I mean, what you're talking about is releasing them. Once you get them in house, spay them, neuter them, do whatever you got to do.
Where are you going to get people to adopt these cats?
The whole question I've had from the fosters is most of these are adoptable cats that we're going to end up taking the cats that they want to adopt and foster out of their care.
So in fiscal year 14-15, we euthanized 2,294 cats. So just continue to euthanize?
I'm being told
that system is not good enough.
Well, I'm being told that we do not have a euthanization problem, that we don't euthanize cats. They're shaking their heads now that we're not killing them for space problems. So I'm just saying I don't think...
That is incorrect.
People don't want stray cats hanging around their yard, whether they're neutered or not.
Yeah, so we're not adding more cats to your community. They're already there.
You will. No, once they're taken away, we don't want to see them back.
Studies have proven the only way to decrease the overall number of cats in your community is to trap, neuter, and return them. That's it. You have to have population pressure. So
you have to adopt them into homes.
So, and cats still will be adopted into homes. Kittens, injured animals, things like that will receive vet care.
And the concern is, too, that a lot of these cats are adoptable, and instead of having the time to be adopted, they're just going to be herded out of the shelter.
They already have the numbers. We just don't know who the owner is. So we're putting them back where they came from.
Okay. What is a feral colony?
So a feral colony is, take a shopping center, somebody will go out and feed a group of cats, and then a well-managed feral colony will... People bring them in to have them spayed and neutered so the population doesn't continue and you decrease your disease. Yeah. So okay. The only way to decrease overall numbers is to spay and neuter.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
All right. Any other questions, comments?
Thank you, John.
A motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Opposed.
One abstention or one opposition. The motion carries. Okay. Purchasing.
Morning, Judge, Commissioners.
Morning.
19A, as authorized by Local Government Code 271.102A, take all appropriate action to approve the purchase of two new 2016 Dodge Charger Pursuits with the options from Grapevine Dodge Chrysler Jeep through the interlocal agreement with Byboard in the amount of $53,392 for the Sheriff's Office.
Move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
B, take all appropriate action to approve granting a discretionary exemption for professional service as authorized by Local Government Code 262.024A4 for the engineering services as addressed on the agenda.
Move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
Item C, as authorized by Local Government Code 271.102, approve the utilization of the contract for consulting services to prepare for the FEMA Flood Mitigation Assistance Program and to process eligible properties and backup documents for the Flood Mitigation Assistance Grant submitted for the 2016 grant cycle through the interlocal agreement with HGAC from Tetra Tech, and not to exceed amount of $25,000. And this is in conjunction with Emergency Management 13A. That was
the grant we applied for earlier. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Move.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Okay, Commissioners, we need to recess our Commissioners' Court and convene a public hearing in First and Precinct 2.
Consider approve establishing a 35-mile-an-hour speed limit on Old Conroe Road from FM 1488 to Park Avenue. Is anyone here to discuss that?
Okay. District Clerk. Good morning.
Good morning, Commissioners, Judge.
Morning.
The District Clerk would ask that you consider and approve the annual District Court Technology Fund written archival plan that will continue the preservation of archived documents from the 1800s to 1999. And the plan was attached in the packet.
Okay. Is there anyone here that would like to make comment on that plan? Seeing none. Okay. Now we'll adjourn our public hearing and reconvene court and take action on those two items.
Move on 20A and B.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries. County Engineer. Mr. Mooney.
Item 21A1, consider and approve a request for supplemental funding in the amount of $208,415.37 to TxDOT in reference to agreement for right-of-way procurement for FM 1488 west of 149 to east of FM 149 and name a funding source in Precinct 2.
I move.
Second.
Funding source?
2016 leverage bond.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Precinct 4.
Precinct 4, consider and approve an agreement to contribute right-of-way funds for right-of-way improvements to State Loop 494 at Evans Gully with TxDOT and authorize Judge Craig Doyle to sign all related paperwork and name a funding source.
I move and...
Commissioner, I'd like for you to sign that paperwork since that's your project.
Fine. Yeah. Yeah, we've got a huge bottleneck there at 494, and it's something that's going to cost us a little bit of money. We're going to get a lot out of it. So,
what's the cost?
One the total cost of the
yeah,
project?
Yeah, what was it again?
The cost of, that they're looking for here?
Yeah.
Commissioner, I don't have that in front of me. I believe it's almost right at $200,000,
yeah.
$194,000.
And where will the funding come from?
Precinct 4.
Okay.
Mr. Clark, you could use the 2016 leveraged bond funds for this as well. It would be appropriate if that was what you wanted.
All right, let's do that.
Okay. Motion?
Yep.
Yep.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mooney. Human Resources. Okay, go ahead.
Prior to asking you to consider and approve the payroll change request forms. On the consent packet, on number one, we're changing the effective date from March 21st, 16 to March 26th, 16.
Okay.
Other than that, please consider and approve the payroll change request forms.
Move.
Second.
All in favor? Motion carries.
And Judge, on number B, I'd like to defer that, please.
A little more information.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
All right. Are there any citizens that would like to address the Commissioner's Court on items that were not on today's agenda? Seeing none, Commissioners, is there anything else any of you have?
Yes, sir.
No, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
Move.
All in favor?
Aye.
Court is adjourned.
Got you out by 11, Jim.